Tonight is Monday night, October 27th, or Chaf Tet Tishrei Tavshin Samach Tes. This is the Gemara share. We're resuming on Daf Sukkah, Daf Chaf Ches Omid Aleph.
Okay, Rabotai, we're picking up where we left off for the summer. We're on Daf Chaf Ches Omid Aleph. The Mishnah, about two-thirds of the way down. We have about another block, left, two blocks in this para, and then we'll start the third para. Okay. The Mishnah quotes a very famous machloikis between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, and a very important principle will be developed based on the position of Beis Shammai. And if you remember, 2 years ago, the Shabbos HaGadol of Russia, I made reference to this Mishnah, as well as some of the sources that I printed for you, in establishing and compiling evidence about this particular principle that we'll see tonight. Mi shahaya rosho virubo besukkah vishulchana besochabayis. Somebody who was in the sukkah, but his table was not in the sukkah. The table was in the house, or partially in the house. Beit Shammai poslin, u Beit Hillel makshirin. Beit Shammai disqualify the sukkah, and Beit Hillel say the sukkah is acceptable. It's obviously not talking that he was sitting in the house. Because if he was sitting in the house, there's nothing to talk about. He was sitting in the sukkah. But the table which he placed in the sukkah extended partially into the house. Nonetheless, Beit Shammai says such a sukkah is disqualified, and as a result you cannot fulfill the mitzvah. Beit Hillel claims it is not disqualified, and as a result you can fulfill the mitzvah. Amru lahem Beit Hillel le Beit Shammai. Said Beit Hillel to Beit Shammai. Lo kach haya ma'aseh. This is not the way, that's not true, that's not the way an episode took place, and it'll show that you, Shammai, are wrong. Why? Shahohu ziknei Beis Shammai, v'ziknei Beis Hillel, levakeh ris Rav Yochanan ben Hachoranis. The elders of Beis Shammai and the elders of Beis Hillel went to visit Rabbi Yochanan ben Hachoranis. Umitza'uhu, and they found him, Shahaya Yoshev, Rosho Verubo Besukkah, Vishulchanai Besukhabites. They found him where he, his head and the majority of his body was in the sukkah, and his table extended into the house. Vilo Amru Lo Davar. And nobody said anything to him. They didn't tell him, Rav Yid, you want to fulfill the mitzvah of sukkah? You better get the table out of your house. Nobody said anything. So apparently, the elders of Shammai retracted their statement. We just said that Beit Shammai claims that the sukkah would be possible. Apparently, Beit Shammai must have retracted their position, because they didn't tell him anything. They went to visit him, and he was sitting with the sukkah, with a table partially in the house. Nobody said anything. Amar lahem, amru lahem Beit Shammai. So the Beit Shammai scholar said, no, Misham Raya, you're bringing me a proof from this story. Afheim amru lo, they did say something to him. What did they say? Im kain hayisa noheg, if you have conducted yourself in this fashion every day of your life, every year, that you had your sukkah and your table extending into the house, lo kiyamta mitzvah sukkah miyomecha. You have never fulfilled the mitzvah of sukkah your entire life. So it's a little difficult to know whether Hillel and Shammai are arguing about the reality. Did they say something, or did they not say something? Because we're quoting a story, an episode,
and we're going to try to formulate the halacha based on the reaction to the episode. The episode, the facts are clear. Rav Yochanan ben Achoranit sitting in the sukkah and his table extended into the house. So according to the first version of the story, nobody said anything. If they didn't say anything, apparently they believed you can fulfill the mitzvah in such a fashion. According to the other version, the way Shammai presented, they said, listen, Rav Yochanan, have you been doing this your whole life? If you have, you have not fulfilled the mitzvah of sukkah once in your entire life. Okay. So I don't know exactly what the reality was. Nobody knows what the reality was. And Rishonim are already somewhat puzzled and perplexed. You know, are they arguing about the history? Well, what happened with this story? I can't clarify it any further. But I can focus on the position of Beit Shammai. What is the reason why Beit Shammai says you cannot fulfill the mitzvah even though you are sitting in the sukkah? What's the reason you cannot fulfill the mitzvah? So the simple interpretation is gzeira shema yimashech achar shulchana. That perhaps if the lamb chops are going to be on the other side of the table, he will now be tempted to do what? To go over to the other side of the table, because on his side of the table there are only some rice wheels. And in order for what? For him to have a decent meal, he's going to want to have the lamb chops. So he's going to shift over to that side of the table, and lo and behold, what will happen? He will not be aware of the fact that he's not sitting in the sukkah. So in order to protect that situation, they said that even if you are sitting in the sukkah, you don't get credit for the mitzvah. Even if you are sitting in the sukkah, lo kiyamta mitzvah sukkah miyamecha, you have not fulfilled the mitzvah of sukkah once in your life. What? Now we're going to see that. Now we're going to see. So the first part of tonight's shiur is going to demonstrate the principle that when you have a rabbinic concern, it has the capacity to invalidate the fulfillment of your mitzvah, even if it's a mitzvah midoraisa. Even though according to biblical law, there is no concern whatsoever. I am sitting in the sukkah. Who cares that half my table's in the house? Who cares? According to Torah law, this is not a concern whatsoever. However, the Rabbanan's ability to decree that we don't like this situation is so powerful that not only will it deny you the fulfillment of the mitzvah on a rabbinic level, even with the oraisa, you will not fulfill the mitzvah. You will not get credit when you come upstairs and you ask to have your pinkas, your record book open. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will say, buddy, you never sat in the sukkah. And you ate out of the sukkah. It's as if you ate out of the sukkah. Incredible. That rabbinic legislation can be so powerful that it will deny you the fulfillment of a mitzvah despite the fact that on a d'oraisa biblical level, there is no such requirement that the table be inside the sukkah. Completely in the sukkah. Yes.
Maybe there's a concern that you're not talking about. You've
got to
be in it. You can't be
I am in it.
Hey, but you're halfway out of it.
I'm not.
No.
I'm not. I'm sitting in.
Okay. You're in your dining room. Half your table is not important.
Okay. So where does it say that my table has to be in the sun? You're saying that. Okay. So we'll see. Okay. Perhaps. Maybe. But then you shouldn't say gzeira shema yimashech akashulchan. Gzeira seems to indicate that it's a rabbinic concern. We're afraid that you'll wind up on that side of the table because the lamb chops are there. So what we are going to see is a variety of other sources which support this premise. that you have a concern midrabanan, and the Rabbanan weigh in and say that our concern is so vital, so powerful, that it will now deny you the opportunity to fulfill a mitzvah. And you will see several illustrations of this tonight. So if you'll take a look at your sheet for just a moment, the first source is the Talmidei Rabbeinu Yoina in Masechet Brachos. First Mishnah in Bracha says, till when are you allowed to read Kriyat Shema Shel Arvus? Till when are you permitted to read Kriyat Shema Shel Arvus? Three opinions. One opinion is Rabbi Eliezer, who says that you're allowed to fulfill the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema Shel Arvus until one third of the night has lapsed. So we're going to operate on our standard imaginary 12-hour day. 6 a.m. sunrise, 6 p.m. sunset. So from 6 p.m. until 10, you're allowed to read Kriya Shema. After 10 o'clock, says Rabbi Eliezer, you cannot fulfill the mitzvah of Kriya Shema. Second opinion. Rabbi Gamliel says, Ad Chatzos, until midnight. Third opinion. Chachamim say you can read it until the next morning, until daybreak the next morning. Three things. Then the Mishnah says that in reality, fundamentally, there are only two opinions. Only two opinions. Chachamim and Rabbi Eliezer. Only two opinions. The two opinions are based on what does the word uveshach b'chal mean. Does it mean that you're allowed to read Kriya Shema while people are going to sleep? And people generally go to sleep in the first part of the night? Or does the word of Veshach B'cha mean while people are sleeping? Those are the only two opinions from a fundamental position. Rabbi Gamliel, who says that you cannot read the Shema after Chatzot, after midnight, really fundamentally agrees with the Chachamim. That you're really allowed to read the Kriya Shema until when? Until Alos HaShachar, the next morning. So what happens? Why do they say until midnight? Because they're afraid that if somebody's going to wait till say, I can read it all night, what's going to happen? He's going to be sitting there watching ESPN, and he's going to fall asleep. Because there's going to be a rain. He's watching Channel 5, the World Series, Saturday night, right? And there's a rain delay, and the game won't end until 10 to 2 in the morning, and he's going to fall asleep, and he will forget to read the Shema. So therefore, the Rabbanan now said, after 12 o'clock, you can't fulfill the mitzvah. That's a gzeira. All we shine in belief that if it's 12:05, and you realize you have not yet fulfilled the mitzvah of Kriya Shema, by all means, read the Shema. On a general day-to-day basis, we tell you, read the Shema before. But if for some reason you didn't, and now at 2 o'clock in the morning I realize I didn't fulfill the mitzvah, of course you should fulfill the mitzvah. And will you get credit? Of course you'll get credit. Why not? Because essentially, the Chachamim agree that the mitzvah is what? Until Alois HaShachar. Until Alois HaShachar. They also believe it. So why did they say until? Just Kedei Laharka. But if it's 2 o'clock in the morning, you didn't read, by all means read. However, the Rabbi Nuyanina, as you have on the top of the page, says absolutely not. At 12:01 a.m., if you didn't read the Kriyat Shema by 12, you don't get credit for fulfilling the mitzvah of Shema, even on the D'oraita level. You forfeit your opportunity to fulfill the mitzvah on the D'oraita level. Why? Because the rabbi said, I want you to read it by 12 on a regular basis. So you have a second illustration where a rabbinic concern that the fact that we are afraid that people are going to fall asleep before they fulfill the mitzvah of Shema, prompting the Chachamim to say, I want you to read the Shema by midnight instead of until the next morning. It is such a powerful gzeira that if for some strange reason, one reason or another, I did not fulfill the mitzvah of Shema, when? By 12? I blew it. Why not? According to Torah law, I can read it till 6 the next morning. Nonetheless, says the Rabbeinu Yonah, I'll show you the key words. It's the end of the end of the first line. V'niru l'mori hara, b'sviru le'le rabbana, she'afilu kriya shema asma shehi min ha'torah kol alayla, eino kore osa achar chatzos. She'yicholim chachamim l'potro mi'mitzvas asei. The chachamim can say, sorry, we've taken away that mitzvah for you. Why are we taking away the mitzvah for and from you? Because we want to teach you a lesson. We want to make sure that tomorrow night, when are you going to read the Shema? Before Chatzos. So if for some reason you're at a wedding, you're in a business meeting, and you realize, I didn't read the Shema, tough starts. You are not going to, you can read the Shema, but you're not getting credit for the mitzvah. So that is a second illustration whereby a rabbinic concern is so potent that it will now preclude you from fulfilling a mitzvah on the Torah's perspective, which according to the Torah has no such restriction whatsoever. So that's a second illustration. I'll give you a third illustration. We'll go to the easier ones first. Go to source Gimel, which is the Rush in Maseches Pesachim. Okay? Gentlemen, why do you have to eat matzah on the 15th night of the month of Nisan? Why? The Torah says, Va'erev tochu matzah. Does the Torah say that you have to eat matzah leaning over? Does the Torah say that? Absolutely not. Okay, here's the rest. I went ahead and ate matzah and I didn't recline. Did I get credit for the mitzvah or not? So you and me would say, yes, I get credit for the mitzvah of eating matzah, and I fail to fulfill the mitzvah midirabanan of haseva, of reclining. But the lack of fulfilling the rabbinic requirement to recline cannot preclude me from fulfilling the biblical mitzvah of eating matzah. That would be illogical. Yet, that's exactly what the Rush says. Let's take a look at the critical line in source Gimel. The critical line. Line 2. V'im ochal, the end of line 2. V'im ochal below haseba loya. If you eat matzah without reclining, even though the requirement to recline is only midirabanan, not midoraita, lo yatza. Not even lo yatza. Why can't I fulfill the mitzvah of eating matzah? I ate matzah. I ate 12 pounds of matzah. But if you didn't recline, you have not fulfilled the mitzvah of matzah. And what do you have to do? You have to eat another tzayis and recline. Again, the Rush's perspective. Many Rishonim disagree with the Rush. And they say, yes, of course there's a mitzvah for Nechaseba. But if you didn't, so you failed to be the kind of mitzvah of Haseba. You can't say you didn't fulfill the mitzvah of eating matzah. Says the Rush, you don't get credit for eating matzah. Lo yatsi yidechavasa. Why? Because the Rabbanon said so. Yes.
Would the Rabbein Yonah agree with that? Because it seems from that passage that says only in the case of Siyah. And this is not a case of
correct. I would agree that the Rabbeinu Yonah would not agree with the Rush's case. Excellent point. That is correct. Next illustration. Source Bet. Rambam in Perak Aleph of Hilchas Nara Besula, Halacha Hei.
I'll tell you, it's one line in the Rambam and then the commentary of the Mishnah Lamela. Here is the halacha. The Torah states that if somebody rapes a single girl, ne'anes, so he has to pay her X number of silver pieces, mea kesef, velo sihye lo le'isha. And she remains married to him, it's her choice of course, she remains married to him for the rest of her life, rest of his life. He is not lo yushchal l'shalcha kol yamav. He is never permitted to divorce her. I am not going into the psychological understanding as to why somebody who was raped by somebody would want to live with this person. I'm not going to talk about it. But let's just say quite briefly that in a society where somebody was unfortunately raped, and, you know, her value was enormously decreased, and many people would never want to marry her. And then she'd be alone the rest of her life. Like this, if she remains married to this person, she can have at least some type of economic security. Maybe he'll apologize, maybe he'll treat her like a mensch, who knows. I can't explain why the Torah says it, but that's what it says. Lo yuchal l'shalcha kol yamav. However, based on the fact that the Torah uses the following phrase, v'lo tihiye lo le'isha, lo le'isha, that this woman shall be unto him as a wife, the halakha says it has to be isha hare'uyalo. Somebody who he's technically allowed to marry. Somebody who he's allowed to marry. But if the person he raped is someone he is not allowed to marry, under those circumstances, this halakha can't apply. That he shall remain married to her whole life. Why can't this be the halakha? Why can't it be the... Because he's not allowed to marry her. So the Torah can't say, v'lo tihiyeh lo le'isha. For example, I'll give you an example. Somebody's married to a very nice young lady. Okay? And then the guy goes rapes his sister. Her sister. Go rapes her sister. Okay? This woman can't be his wife. Why can't this woman be his wife? Because you're not permitted to live with two women who are sisters during the course of their lifetime. Not allowed. Even if divorced, your first wife. You're not allowed to live during the course of their lifetime. You can't live with both women. So under those circumstances, he pays the fine, but he does not have to, he cannot marry her, and the restriction of v'lo sihiyeh lo le'isha does not apply. Does not apply. The prohibition of living with your sister-in-law while your wife is married is a biblical one. Huh? Mother wife's alive. It's a biblical one. So we can understand why the Torah will not compel you to marry the sister who you raped. Because the prohibition of living with both of them during the course of your lifetime is biblical. So the Rambam is now going to the case. What happens if he rapes somebody who mid-de-oraita he's allowed to live with, and mid-de-rabbanan, she is an arayit, it's called shniyos la'arayit. Somebody who was an erva, prohibited relationship, only mid-de-rabbanan. For example, a grandmother. Mid-de-oraita, you're allowed to marry your grandmother. Why would anybody want to marry a grandmother either? For a sake. Because the halacha is that when a woman dies, the husband inherits her. So your grandmother, she's 98 years old, but she's a multi-millionaire. So you live with her for a couple of years, and then she'll die, and hopefully a quite peaceful death, and you'll become a multi-millionaire. Somebody will want to live with his grandmother. According to Torah law, it's perfectly okay.
The Rabbanan said you're not allowed to marry your grandma. Not allowed to marry your grandma. Listen to this weirdo. This weirdo raped his grandmother. He raped his grandmother. Nope. So what happens? He has to pay her 100 silver pieces. And now the Torah says, V'lo sihiyeh lo le'isha. Lo yuchal l'shalcha kol yamah. So from a Torah perspective, is this woman eligible to him? Yes.
Says the Rambam, Haita, we're reading Halacha Hey, source Bet, Haita Anusa Zu Asura Alav, Afilu Mechaive Asay, the Afilu Shniya, Hareza Lo Yisien. If the woman who he raped was prohibited unto him, based on the fact that she's a Shniya, which means a secondary category of Arayot, which according to Torah law does not exist, he's not allowed to marry her. Why not? The Torah says you have to marry her.
The rabbis say, we're saying no. Because this woman is Asura Midrabanan, it trumps the biblical obligation of living with this woman post the rape.
Why? The Rabbanan have that capacity.
This is more in the case of a
law. This is a mitzvah saseh. Velosi is one of the taryag mitzvot of the Torah.
Before, where the rabbis are afraid to be over a law, okay,
but that law was a doraisa. Normally, the siyag case, that was Marvin's point. Normally, the Rabbanan say, we suspend a mitzvah, because we're afraid you're going to violate an Issa Doraisa.
But carrying, is that the Issa Doraisa?
Carrying is an Issa Doraisa on Shabbos, of course. But here, you're not going to violate an Issa Doraisa. You're going to violate an Issa Doraisa. So I would say, fulfill the mitzvah of Doraisa, and the Rabbanan should say, in this case, we waive our Issa Doraisa to enable you to fulfill the mitzvah of Doraisa. No, they don't say that. They don't say that. Yes.
But it should be distinguished between the case of the rabbi saying Shev Al Pasa versus the idea that if you did the act that they otherwise didn't want you to do, you still don't have credit for the key.
Okay. I'm not saying it's exactly parallel. Those cases go even one step further.
Right.
Correct. But I'll ask you a question. If I now say that the Lo Cielo Lisha, the Rambam counts as one of the five mitzvahs, you won't get credit for the mitzvah.
You did it.
You did it, you won't get credit for the mitzvah, you're going to have to divorce her.
And it has to be the Garisha. Yes. Example number four. Is a Rambam in Hilchos Trumos. Same identical principle. Here is the halacha. Okay? Kohen. Kohen is not permitted to eat truma that is tameh. Nor is the Kohen who is tameh allowed to eat truma tahor. So we have two kahanim here. Right? You are not permitted to eat truma tamea. Okay? So if I have an apple and a sheretz touched this apple, which was truma, you're not allowed to eat it. Similarly, if you became tamea, for any reason whatsoever you became tamea. Okay? Under those circumstances, you are not allowed to eat truma tahor. Says the Torah, there is a penalty. Both cases are prohibited in Doraisa. Both. But if a Kohen who is tahor eats truma tamea, there is no penalty of misa bidei shamayim.
He violates the law, but he doesn't get Nisa Bidei Shemayim. But if he is Tameh and he eats Truma Tahora, then he violates the law and he gets Nisa Bidei Shemayim. Okay? Gets Nisa Bidei Shemayim. So, the reason is that if you eat, because the Torah uses the following expression in Parshas Emor. Umesu bo ki yichaleluhu. The Kohen who eats Truma while he is Tameh is desecrating the Truma. Truma is holy, and if it's holy, he shouldn't be eating it when he's Tameh. Umesu bo, he, why? Yichaleluhu, because he desecrated that truma by eating holy truma while he was coming. But if the truma itself, oh, we have three times, excuse me. If the truma itself was tamei, if the truma itself was tamei, four times, two, and Ruben the Ruben Kahneman, if the truma itself was tamei, then he is not disgracing the truma. The truma is already disgraced because somebody else was metameh. That's the halach. Trust me, that's the halach. Again, David is tahor. If he eats truma tamei, nisa b'nei shema. If he is tameh and he eats, the opposite. If he's tahor and he eats truma tamei, he violates the law with no nisa. But if he is tahor, if he is tameh, and he eats truma tahora, misa bidei shemayim. Okay? So the Mishnah Melech raises the following question. What happens if the item which was tameh was only tameh midrabbanan? Only tameh midrabbanan. Listen, here's the case. David's tahor, and he eats something which according to Torah law is Tahar, and the rabbi said it's only Tahar. Okay, I'll give you an illustration. Very simple illustration. I am a Yisrael, I touch a Sheretz. What status am I? The Sheretz is called the Av HaTomah, primary status. What am I? Arisha. I now touch the apple. I touch this apple. What's the apple? Asheni. Asheni is tamei only midrabban. Midoraisa, the apple is tahor. Midoraisa, the apple is tahor.
It's a truma apple?
It's a truma apple. Midrabbanan, it's truma. Truma tamei. Midoraisa, it's truma tahor. Good. Now what happens? He's tameh and he eats it. He's tameh and he eats it. He's tameh midoraisa. He's tameh midoraisa. Good. And now he ate this apple, which is only tameh midrabbana. Should he get nisa b'nei shemayim or not? Should he get Nisa B'nei Shemayim from a Torah's vantage point? What is he eating? Truma Tahira. A Kohen who is Tameh, who eats Truma Tahira, gets Nisa B'nei Shemayim. Says the Mishnah Lev, I don't think he will. Nobody knows how to respond to rules of ethics. But I don't think he will. You know why? Because when David ate it, it was Tameh Midrabbanan. And since that apple was tameh midrabbanan, it overrides the punishment which should have been instituted midoraisa. That's unbelievable. That's incredible. That's the greatest expression yet. That a din midrabbanan will protect you from a chi of nisa. Midoraisa, you deserve to die. Because you, Kohen, were tameh, and you ate an apple that midoraisa was tahor. But the Rabbanan said this apple was tummy. Because it was touched by me who touched the sheretz. Sheretz is the Av, I become the Risha, I'm tummy with the right. The apple now is only tummy with the Rabbanan. Says the Mishnah, you're not going to die. He's not sure. He's mistapachna. But the mere fact that he's even willing to entertain the possibility, that he's willing to entertain the possibility, what does it show you, Rabbi? The potency of a dindarabbah. That the fact that the rabbis have declared that this apple is tamei, now makes it that this Kohen ate Tameh food, not Tahor food. And a Kohen who is Tameh, who eats Tameh food, he's not on Dusa. But there's no penalty of that. Yes.
If he was Tahor, the food is Tameh with the Rabbanan, is he Chayav with the Raisa with the Rabbanan?
If he is Tahor,
right. There's a lot, right, and he eats Tameh with the
Rabbanan. No, right.
There's a lot.
Correct.
Right?
No, he will not be, he certainly will not be Chai Yisra B'nai Shalom. Yes, because he violates the law.
Is it allowed?
No, I don't know.
It's
only with Rabban.
I
know, you're using it one way. Correct, to protect you, not to condemn you. That's correct.
You made the comment that, you know, who knows what Hashem is, you know,
tasking up in heaven.
In all these cases, you could really mean...
Because the mitzvah is only B'dei Shemai.
But even the Rabbanan might say, or the Rishon might say, in the language a little bit, you know, lo yochal.
Right.
Lo
kiyem, we don't know what Akash Baruch is going to agree with you.
Even, you know,
no. Rabbi Nagai is going up there to Rabbanan and say, listen, I say, Tzadik Goy is there, Akash Baruch on the Kai. I say, you don't fulfill the mitzvah. That's what I say. And we'll see what HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to him. That'll be nice. I'd like to be in that discussion up there one day when it's my time and hear this discussion with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and these Rishayim will say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu say, either you're right or say, what, are you off the wall? Don't tell me what to do. That's all. Final example. The Mishnah Imsach. Famous Mishnah Imsach. On the 14th night of the month of Nisan, Or Arba Asa Bodkin Eshachomets Loraner. Take a look at Rashi on the left-hand side, second line of the Rashi, Bedibur Amatzchol Bodkin. Why does Rashi claim you must make Bedika and Biur on the night of the 14th? Why? Rashi says why? Shelo Ya'abor Bebal Yerom Ba'imatzah. So that you will not violate the biblical prohibition of Bayiron Bayimatz. That's what Rashi says. So Taisus jumps all over Rashi and says, what do you mean? To protect it from Bayiron Bayimatz, you don't have to clean, you don't have to search and destroy, just do bittul. Say, all my homage is bittul. Hefker, whatever you want to say, bittul is. I don't violate by Yom Bayimatzah. Do I have to go search and destroy? So there are many answers to Rashi. One of the answers in defense of Rashi is that if the rabbis say you have to do Bedikah and Biur, we don't care that according to Torah law you can rely on Bittul. We said you have to do B'dik and Biur. And if we say you must do B'dik and Biur, what now happens if you didn't do B'dik and Biur? You're going to violate the law by your own by your mother. We're going to tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu upstairs to write down a big X in your book that you violated the biblical prohibition of ownership of Chametz on Pesach. Even though according to Torah law, you did not. Why? Because all you have to do is declare the half chametz as butter, whatever, whether it's hefker or kafke or it's ke'afra da'aro like the Ramban. That's all. So all of these principles, gentlemen and ladies, demonstrate to us the power of what the Rabbanon say. The power of what the Rabbanon say. And I want to bring you back to a Mishnah which quoted another Machloikis, which Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank believes this whole debate, whether the rabbis have the capacity to do this or not, is actually a Machloikis Tanoim. Please go for just a moment to the Mishnah which we studied a couple of months ago, Daf Chof Beis Amud Beis. Go to the Mishkan, Daf Chof Beis Amud Beis, for just a second. Chof Beis Amud Beis, for just a second. Chof Beis Amud Beis. Okay? The Mishnah says, third line of the Mishnah. I'm Chof Bet Amid Bet. Ha'oseh Sukaso, I'm just filling those two words. Berosh Ha'ilan O Al Gabe Gomo. Sheira Ve'in Olin Rabiyanto. Somebody made a sukkah on the top of a camel. That's where he put his sukkah. He built his sukkah on the top of a camel. Or he built a sukkah and a treehouse. Okay? So the Mishnah says the sukkah is kosher, but you're not allowed to go on it on the first day of Yom. Because on Yontiv, an animal is muktzah. You're not allowed to climb on an animal on Yom. You're not allowed to climb a tree on Yom Tov. But the sukkah essentially is kosher. The Gemara says later on that that's only Rabbi Akiva's opinion. On the top of Chof Gimel Amud Aleph, look at the top Gimel Amud Aleph. Says the Gemara, not the top, about a third of the way down. O al gabe hagomol. Masnisin Rabbi Meir hi. The author of our Mishnah is Rabbi Meir. Desanya ha'oseh sukasay al gabe behema, Rabbi Meir machshir, Rabbi Huda posel. The Mishnah said that the sukkah is kosher. That's Rabbi Meir's opinion. Rabbi Yehuda said the sukkah is possible. Possible. Not just that you can't climb up on the first day. The sukkah is possible. You can't use that sukkah even on the second day of Kol Amos, when there's no prohibition to climb a camel. Why? Because every sukkah, as we learn, has to be theoretically suitable for 7 days. You need a sukkah haru'uya l'shiva, a sukkah that theoretically could be used for 7 days. Okay? Can this sukkah be used according to Torah law for 7 days? According to Torah law, can this sukkah? Of course it can. Why? Because according to Torah law, there's no prohibition to climb a tree. According to Torah law, there's no prohibition to climb an animal on Yom Tov. Who said you're not allowed to climb an animal? The rabbis. Who said you're not allowed to climb a tree? The rabbanan. And because of the rabbinic prohibition that you can't climb an animal, mid the rabbanan, the sukkah is pasul mid the oraisa for 7 days. It's not sukkah hara'uya l'shiva. That's Rabbi Huda's opinion. Rabbi Meir says, that's the difference. Of course the sukkah is kosher. Because you can't have a rabbinic law impacting upon what? On a din d'oraisa. You can't. Since mid d'oraisa you're allowed to climb up the tree and climb on the animal, from a d'oraisa perspective, is this a sukkah that is suitable for 7 days? Of course it is. So Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank claims that this entire discussion from tonight, the entire discussion as to whether or not rabbinic legislation is potent enough to cancel, annul, counteract the Din d'oraisa is actually a machlokes Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Huda. Rabbi Meir says absolutely not. The mere fact that the Rabbanan said you cannot climb a tree does not label the sukkah as a sukkah she'ena ru'uya l'shiva. So even though you can't climb on the first day, because it's us and the Rabbanan, that does not deny you the capacity of the sukkah second through seven. Whereas according to Rabbi Meir, it obviously does. Excuse me, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it obviously does. Why? Because a sukkah that is disqualified mid the Rabbanan, even for the first day, forfeits its shame sukkah all yantif. All yantif. That's point number one. Demonstrating the essence of this principle of the Mishnah. Point number two. The Gemara on Daf Gimel Amud Aleph, and I'm not going to ask you to, happens to say that the machloikis between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel actually revolves, has two different applications to this machloikis. One is called Sukkah Kitana, and the other one is Sukkah Gedoyla. Sukkah Kitana and Sukkah Gedoyla. What is a Sukkah Kitana, Rabbi? Who remembers what is the smallest dimensions that the halakha will allow a Sukkah? Seven Tfachim by seven Tfachim. That's a very, very small Sukkah. This is a Tefa. Seven Tfachim by 7 tefachim and 10 tefachim high. That's what you need. 7 tefachim. A tefach is about how many inches? 4 inches? What would you say? How much is your hand grasp? 4 inches? Okay, let's say 4 inches. It has to be 28 inches wide, 28 inches long. That's 2 feet, 4 inches. That's all it has to be. You and your table got to be in. Okay? You and your table. So now listen to this. The Gemara says that the machloikis between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai is by a sukkah katana, where it's exactly 7 by 7, and part of the table is outside. You know why it was outside? Because you couldn't get it in. Once you sat down, it was impossible to get the table in. That's why part of it had to be inside. As well as the sukkah gedolah. The sukkah is 50 feet long. 50 feet wide. The part of the table goes inside the house. So the Gemara says that the machloikis between Shammai and Hillel, the Gemara was on Daf Gimel. I'm just reminding you about the Gemara. And this reiterates famous Chinese proverb. If you don't chaza, you forget. Very famous proverb. No review, don't chaza, you forget. So the Gemara says there that the machloikis is by sukkah gedolah and sukkah katana. Now there's a four-way machloikis or rishonim. How do we pass? How do we pass? Says the Baal Amor, number one. Says the Baal Amor, number one. Opinion number one. Sukkah katana. It's pasul midoraisa. Sukkah gedola, it's only pasul midrabbanan. What does that mean? If I have a sukkah that's exactly 7 by 7, sukkah time, you know what they expect me to get into a sukkah that's 7 by 7? Everything that's necessary to live. Teishvu ke'ein to do. You have to live in your sukkah the way you reside in your house. Nobody resides in their house when the table is outside the door. That's not the way people live. You have to be able to get in, bare minimum, you and a place to sit. Therefore the Baal Amor says that if it's sukkah katana, you know why if the sukkah has the table outside? You know why? Because the sukkah is not big enough to fulfill the mitzvah of teshuv, just like you said. That's what the Baal Amor says. If it's a sukkah gedolah, where the sukkah by definition is kosher, undoubtedly what could happen, then you could, then it's only zero. The sukkah per se, you could fulfill the mitzvah sukkah station. It's big enough to fulfill the sukkah station. You're crazy, you put the table halfway into the house, that's only zero midirabanan, shema yimashech achashukhan. But by a sukkah katana, with exactly the measurements of 7x7, the sukkah is possible midoraisa. That's the Balamor Shita. Balamor Shita. And therefore, says the Balamor, I'm going to split my sukkah. By sukkah katana, I pass it like Beishama. Sukkah katana, I pass it like Beishama. So by sukkah katana, are you going to fulfill the mitzvah in a sukkah katana? No. Sukkah katana, if the shulchan is part of us, you're not going to be required to miss it. By sukkah gedolah, I pass it like Beishama. In other words, I'm not worried that what's going to happen if you're sitting in the sukkah, that I'm afraid that what? You're going to wind up next to your table, even though the lamb chops are on that side. I'm not afraid of that. So the Baal HaMor splits the sukkah. Sukkah Ketana, he passes like Beis Shammai. Sukkah Gedoyla, he passes like Beis Hillel. That's the Baal HaMor. The Rif, Paskins, like both of them, like Beis Shammai. Very unusual. The Rif passes like Beis Shammai in both types of sukkahs. On a sukkah katana level and a sukkah gedolah level, he says he agrees with the Baal HaMor. He obviously, the Baal HaMor came after him. But conceptually, they have the same thing. One is possible with the Raisa, one is possible with the Rabbanan, but I pass like Beis Shammai both ways. Any time the table is partially in the house, you're not going to be a kind of this thing. If it's a sukkah katana, you won't fulfill the midrash. If it's sukkah midrash, won't fulfill the midrash. But he passes like Beis Shammai in both cases. In both cases. Rabotai, I want you to listen to Rabbi Kivega. His commentary on the Mishnah. Listen to this! Kivega asks, if I have my sukkah right next to yours, and my table, it doesn't fit into my sukkah. But it goes into your sukkah. Does it go into your sukkah? It goes into your sukkah. Rav Kivega says it's kosher. Tell me, why does Rav Kivega think it's kosher under those circumstances? Tell me why.
What's
going to
happen?
Even if I follow the other end of the table, at the lamb shop, where am I going to be? It'll be in your sukkah. What's the problem? However, the Ramban, obviously not reacting to Rabbi Kivega, the Ramban believes that whereas sukkah kitana, sukkah gedolah, excuse me, is only zereshem yimashe, sukkah kitana, it's a psula nechepsa. Means, when you have a sukkah that's exactly 7x7 and your table can't fit in it, it's not possible because of what reason, that what, you're afraid you're going to wind up at the end of the table. What's the default? The sukkah's not big enough. It's not a sukkah. Because your sukkah has to be big enough to hold what? You and your table. If it's sticking out, even if it's into another sukkah, your sukkah is possible. Therefore, you will not be Mekayim the Mitzvah. So whereas the Baal HaMor believes that the psul is in the Gavra, that it's not Teshu, just the way you said it, the Ramban says it's Halacha the Chetza. And had the Ramban thought of this crazy case of Rav Kivega, which he didn't, he would have said it's possible as well. Yes?
Then how can that be the definition of a minimum scholar?
What do you mean?
If a minimum size is kosher, how can that be the definition?
No, the minimum size is kosher. You have to find a table that's small enough to fit in. If your table, you
are saying it's impossible to do it.
It's not impossible. It is possible to do it. All of your furniture has to fit in. If you can't do it, the sukkah is possible. But the sukkah is defined by your ability to get yourself and all of your pertinent, relevant furniture in. If you can't do it, the sukkah is possible. If you can manage in 28 inches to get you, your table, and your bed, and whatever else in, you're a genius. You're unbelievable. How are you able to sit like that? Maybe an astronaut can do it, sitting, you know, cooped up in that little, the way Glenn used to, remember? It was cooped up like that for 3 days. That's Shitas HaRamban. And that's Reb Kivega, who says, very interesting Reb Kivega case. Most people don't know that Reb Kivega. It's not in it's printed in Reb Kivega's Chidushim on the Mishnayos. So tomorrow when you're standing along in Glad Express, or waiting for a toll or something, you know, you get another thing, you tap the guy in front of you and say, well, yeah, heck of a Reb Kivega finish. Never heard of this Reb Kivega. Never heard of this Reb Kivega. Okay, let's finish the mission. Please finish the mission. Back to the Mishnah. Second half of the Mishnah has nothing to do with the first half of the Mishnah. Totally different topic. And in fact, the Gemara doesn't even do any of this explaining because the Gemara assumes that we remembered this discussion from Daf Gimel, where it discussed Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel with the Sukkah Gedolah and the Sukkah Ketanah. Daf Gimel Amud Aleph. That was just Chazara. Says the Mishnah, Nashim va'avadim uktanim p'turim min ha-sukkah. Women, Avadim and Ketanim, minors, are putim in a sukkah. No surprise, the mitzvah asei shazman grama, it's bound by time, it's only for 7 days, so therefore women and Ketanim are putim from every single mitzvah. However, midirabbanan, a katan, is chayiv in the mitzvah of chinuch. When is the age of chinuch for the mitzvah of sukkah? When does a child reach the age of chinuch? Says the Mishnah, katan she'eino tzarich li'imo chayiv v'sukkah. A child who no longer needs his mother, according to most Rishonim, means he's no longer nursing any longer. Doesn't need his mother any longer. Because the assumption is, mother is not going to be in the sukkah. She's not chayiv. So if the child, and other Rishonim say it doesn't mean nursing, it means the kid's old enough to sit alone without his mother hanging around, changing his diapers all the time.
Nowadays that's like 30 years old.
So such a child, midirabbanan, is chayiv in sukkah. Mm-hmm. Concludes the Mishnah. Ma'ase v'yolda kaloso shel shamay hazaken. There was an episode where the daughter-in-law of Shammai gave birth to a little pesher, a boy. Upiches et hamaaziva v'sicheh agave hamita b'shvil katan. What he did was he knocked out the plaster of the roof in the house, and he put schach on it, so that the little baby in his carriage will be sleeping in the sukkah. That's the story of Shammai. The Gemara will now ask the question, this story seems to contradict the rule that the Gemara just said. Because the Mishnah said the rule was that how old does the kid have to be in order to be chayav in sukkah? And here you have this little pitcher who's 1 day old, and Beit Shammai already knocked down the roof, and he just put schach on top of the roof. So the Gemara will ask that question. Very nice. Good. But Hayotze Midvareinu, what we accomplished tonight? We accomplished two things tonight. Number one, that the principle of Beis Shammai is a potent one. That a din derabbanan has the capacity to override a din d'oraisa. And we brought 5 other cases to demonstrate support for that notion. We then quoted the Gemara on Daf Gimel, which told us that the machlokes between Shammai and Hillel applies in 2 different types of sukkahs. One sukkah is a sukkah katana, bare bones minimum, 28 inches, 7 tefachim by 7 tefachim, 28 inches by 28 inches, which is the bare minimum requisite length. But the table was inside. And the machlokes is by sukkah gedolah. huge sukkah, but the table's extending inside the house. Balamar, Paskin, like Beis Shammai in one, in the sukkah katana one. Because since your table is not big enough, you can't fulfill the mitzvah of sukkah teisha shivat yam. With a sukkah gedola, where it's only midrabbanan, we're afraid that you're going to wind up at the lamb chops on the other side of the table. That's only a zayr. I don't accept a custom like Beis Shammai. So Shammai, so Balamar split his decision. Second opinion was the Ritz. The Ritz says, no, I paskin like Beis Shammai in both cases. Both cases. One is pasul midoraisa, the other one is pasul midorabbanan, but I paskin like Beis Shammai in both of them. Then we came up with Rav Kivedia's case, where sukkah is small, but it doesn't protrude, the table doesn't protrude into the house, it protrudes into the next door sukkah. So Rav Kivedia says, why should it be pasul? Even if I wind up on the side of the lamp chops, with a lamp chop, I'm going to be in someone else's sukkah. You can be out in the midst of someone else's sukkah. Says the Ramban, according to Ramban doesn't say this, but according to the Ramban, it would be pasul. Why? Because fundamentally, he believes that the deficiency of sukkah, the sukkah height, by sukkah kana, is a psul in the chesed. The sukkah is not big enough. Once the sukkah is not big enough, the sukkah is pasul. Once the sukkah is pasul, even if you're going to wind up in somebody else's sukkah, while you're sitting in your sukkah, you will not be mekayim the mitzvah. Therefore, according to the Ramban, you would have to reject Rabbi Kivager's unusual premise. Okay, stop here and continue next to Vach, and we'll get to understand the discussion about katanim and women as the Gemara will proceed.